Les colloques du Collège de France.
First off, thanks so much to the organizers for putting this paper on the program. It's really fantastic to present for this super impressive audience. Thanks so much for having us. This is emissions-adjusted total effective productivity, and it speaks very much to what John was talking about at the start of the day. So, as I'm sure many of you are aware of, there's been a big slowdown of productivity growth since the mid-2000s, which most of us agree is one of the main policy priorities of our time. What is maybe, certainly for the people in this room, right, growth economists or innovation economists, what's less on our radar is that around the same time as this slowdown of productivity growth, there was actually also a big reduction in the carbon intensity of production. So since the mid-2000s, American carbon dioxide emissions have fallen by about 25%, and emissions over GDP have fallen by about 40%. Now, what we want to do in this paper is think about how you can connect the two lines in this graph. Is there a way to think about productivity that incorporates the fact that we've made progress on emissions? And there's a very simple logic. In the end, what we care about when we measure productivity is how good are we at producing utility or welfare, right? If you give me a bundle of inputs, what's the number of utils that we get out of that? So if we're now able to produce in a less emitting way, that's good, right? So the question is, what is a good way to put that into one productivity index? And it's not going to be tree-huggery. I'm going to present this in a way. I'm going to try and write down a way of thinking about productivity such that a Chicago-style economist like Ufuk would think it's still rigorous. So the motivation is what I just said. We have these opposite trends in productivity growth and the carbon intensity of production. And carbon emissions are a byproduct of emissions that certainly in the climate macro literature, we think have something to do with each other, right? Carbon emissions is a byproduct of production, but it's gonna affect future economic activity negatively. And current productivity statistics don't measure those increases in efficiency. So what this paper does is it proposes an emissions adjusted measure of total factor productivity, TFP, E, and it's going to be defined as the marginal effects of inputs on the present value of output, taking the negative effects of climate damages into account. Now, some people here think, well, isn't productivity a static measure? It's you give me some inputs, you give me some outputs, but I'm going to show you in a moment that actually in the absence of emissions, TFP just overlapped with TFP. So we're not going to do anything exotic. Okay, so TFP also measures the present value of inputs on output. But you'll see that in a few slides. The framework is going to be built on standard integrated assessment models, including what Nordhaus won the Nobel for. And it's going to be very easy to calculate. It's just going to rely on publicly available data and, importantly, and I'll be talking a lot about that, an estimate of the social cost of carbon. What we're going to find in this paper is that for traditional low estimates of the social cost of carbon, and certainly any cost of carbon that we've seen as a market outcome, productivity measured as TFPE and standard total effective productivity is roughly the same. And that's because these estimates of productivity imply that the value of climate damages is so small that we really shouldn't care. We're doing the right thing here today. We should only be thinking about economic growth and not about carbon emissions. However, over time, estimates of the damages embedded in carbon emissions have been increasing. And what we're going to show is that for the highest estimates of the social cost of carbon, the reduction in emissions that we've seen over the past 20 years is so beneficial for welfare that there's actually not been a slowdown of productivity growth. So if you believe the highest estimate of the social cost of carbon, there's not been a productivity slowdown. If you believe low estimates of the social cost of carbon that macroeconomists have worked with for decades, in that case, TFPE is approximately TFP, but the flip side of the coin is that the only thing you should care about is economic growth. You should not care about about emissions.
Is the direct effect that just the reduction in emission in itself, you know, increases quality on its own, but it could be also that we produce things that are not factored in by measured TFP growth, and in the process of doing that, we reduce also emissions.
Absolutely. I think this is a great idea for a paper. If I would give it a title, I would call it Endogenous Degrowth, Philippe. But if you've already written that paper. No, absolutely. So what we're going to do today, Philippe, is purely accounting. Right, so we're just going to do stuff in a spreadsheet. It's going to be very easy to calculate, but you'll see the framework that we're going to write down. We're not going to take a stance on what's driving the slowdown of emissions. I'm certainly not going to argue that there's a causal link between the slowdown of productivity growth and this trend in emissions. I'm just going to argue that lower emissions are a welfare benefit that productivity statistics don't capture. I'm going to do the maths to see what productivity looks like if you do make that change.
Just about the
conclusion. Yeah. So the answer is very. So the moment that you no longer think, so the question, if people didn't hear it, so Xavier is asking, when it comes to the social cost of carbon, are the results very sensitive to whether you internalize your global externality or only your domestic one? The only way to get a sizable social cost of carbon is to care about the fact that our emissions affect the rest of the world. If you do not do that, climate change makes absolutely no sense, right? The estimates for even the UK suggest that maybe the domestic cost of carbon is even slightly negative. Right? We're going to grow nice wines. We're going to have holidays in Brighton.
For countries like the US, right, or Europe as a whole, there's some where when you get the highest social cost of carbon estimates, this can be
absolutely
funded. So
yeah. That's fair enough. So what I'm going to show you, Xavier, is I'm going to show you for what estimates of the dollar cost of the social cost of carbon, adjusting emissions, adjusting for the productivity for emissions is going to be big, and when is it going to be small. How you arrive at those dollar costs is something that actually for the exercise that we're doing, you can be agnostic about. So we're just going to do very simple accounting. So let me give you the framework. The framework is going to build on a standard integrated assessment model, Nesting Nordhaus, 1992. So consider, for now, a closed economy, right? Think of the world economy, with global output Y, emissions E, and a stock of past emissions S. Here are the two key assumptions that we're going to make. First off, the production function, and this is the Nordhaus innovation to climate macro, is a neoclassical production function in productivity, some function of inputs K, so that the fancy K here is capital, labor, different types of capital, so it's all part of the fancy K. And now you multiply that by this D, where D is the damage function. And the damage function is going to be lower if the stock of past emissions in the atmosphere is greater. Perhaps our most restrictive assumption is going to be that we assume that there's a competitive relative price of investments, in the sense that the price of the relative price of investments in the national accounts captures the marginal rate of transformation of investments. So GDP in the economy is spent on consumption, either by households or by governments, and investment goods. And finally, so we have two more equations. We have that emissions are some function of the number of inputs that we use. That function is going to be linear within years. That's a standard assumption in macro environmental. But there's this phi, and this phi captures how year on year, through changes in the emissions intensity of production, we've become better at emitting less. So finally, what does the household care about? The household cares about consumption. So for now, we're going to define preferences as just the present value of consumption. And in the paper, we show that this is really easy to generalize to something like a concave utility function, or if there are costs to climate change, such as old age mortality. There's a question there.
Yeah, just a big question. So why emissions adjust productivity and not say consumption? I'm thinking about this whole period is one where maybe the U.S. outsourced a lot of dirty production to China. And so I'm trying to think about, you know, if you focus on U.S. productivity as opposed to the U.S. consumption bundle, and how emissions intensive is.
So in general, the reason that we care so much about productivity is that productivity is really a first order measure of welfare. If an economy grows because we work more hours or we use more capital, that's not productivity growth. And the reason that we don't care about that is because we don't like working. And if we're investing more in capital, that goes at the expense of consumption today. There is a question when we come to measurements, right, later on, which is, when we measure American emissions, do we include the fact that now a greater part of American emissions are imported? What we're going to do here is we're actually going to attribute American imported emissions to America when we do the math. And the graph that I just showed you is actually trade adjusted emissions. So it's going to count emissions for American consumption that have been incurred in China. We're going to call those American emissions. But I'm going to show you in a minute that despite what your prior might be, that actually doesn't explain this reduction in American emissions at all.
Please, Philip. That
the S is the sum of the past ET or... Exactly. So S is the stock of past emissions, as it says on the second line. So it's some complicated function of all previous emissions. So this depreciation function is quite complicated. Exactly. But we're just going to treat that as data. So we don't need that, actually. Okay, so let me get to the crux of the paper. What is a good measure of productivity in this economy? So standard total factor productivity tells us, if you give me a bundle of inputs, some F of K, how much output do I get, right? So we can think about that on the margin, or we can think of that just as an average because of the neoclassical production function. And then in the economy is A times this damage function. So if there's a lot of carbon in the atmosphere that is making it impossible for us to go to work, and that's reducing productivity, that's already part of our current productivity statistics. We don't need to do an adjustment for that. TFPE is going to account for the fact that if we produce more today, we're going to have more emissions, and these higher emissions are going to affect our ability to produce in the future. So we're going to define TFPE not as the effect of inputs on today's production, we're going to define TFPE as the effect of today's inputs on welfare going forward, the present value of consumption. And that total derivative, that derivative of the present value of consumption with respect to inputs, has a bunch of partial derivatives. First, if we use more inputs, we're going to consume more today. If we consume more today, that's going to increase our present value of consumption. Second, if we use more inputs, we can invest more. That's the second partial derivative here. And if we invest more, we're going to have more consumption in the future. And finally, if we use more inputs, we're going to have more emissions, and those emissions are going to affect future output as well. That's the final partial derivative on this slide. And I know there's some applied... This is an applied conference, and I promise you that the maths is not going to go beyond what we've done here. Although we are going to see these equations a couple more times. So what I'm going to show you guys now is that even though it might look like TFPE is quite hard to measure from all of these partial derivatives, it's actually very close to how we normally measure productivity. And in fact, I'm going to show you that the first two terms on the bottom equation here are just productivity. It's just TFP. It's what you've always been measuring. And here is why. It's because of the envelope theorem. So let's look at what is actually in that equation. The first term tells us, if we use more inputs, how much do we consume? How much does the extra consumption benefit our welfare? Well, the effect of consuming more today on the present value of consumption, that's just one, right? Because the present value of consumption is a sum of all of our future consumption discounted. If we consume more today, one-for-one increase in our welfare. Here is the only complicated step in the paper, is this second partial derivative. This tells us, right, if we use more inputs, how much are we going to invest? And what is the effect of these investments on welfare? And the only difficult thing is that this derivative is also equal one. And it just follows from the envelope theorem, right? If investment goods are competitively priced, on the margin, I don't care whether I spend an extra dollar on consumption or on investment goods, right? So these two partial derivatives have to be the same. So what's these two terms, the first two partial derivatives? It's just the effect of inputs today on consumption plus investment, which is GDP. So the first two terms are just productivity, as you've always measured it. TFPE is thus equal to standard productivity plus an adjustment term for the present value of environmental damages. And there, when you insert the model, you can replace this final derivative with the phi that we have. We can write that as a function of observables. And then the final term that we have is the marginal effect of a unit of emissions on the present value of consumption. Now, the marginal effect of emissions on the present value of consumption is a really complicated object. The good news for us is that is actually the textbook definition, like what we teach undergrads, as the definition of the social cost of carbon. The social cost of carbon that we use to evaluate cost-benefits analyses in climate policy, it uses the same definition of the social cost of carbon as we do. So whenever you want to measure TFPE, instead of us trying to come up with a way of measuring how damaging a unit of emissions is going to be for future consumption, we can just look at the literature and say, what do you guys think the social cost of carbon is, and insert those numbers into our model. So if you group all of the terms, so you write this fee as a function of observables, you insert that this final big sum is just the social cost of carbon, what you get is that TFPE just equals TFP times 1 minus emissions over GDP times the social cost of carbon. So it's just a function of observables as well as the social cost of carbon, which is, some people hate this term, I'm gonna use it, it's a sufficient statistic, right? So under particular assumptions, people derive estimates for the social cost of carbon. We're just gonna say, okay, you give me a dollar value for the social cost of carbon that you trust, and we're gonna tell you what TFPE is. Now here's the Xavier slide, which is a conceptual issue. Should TFPE at the country level consider the effect that your emissions have on the rest of the world? In climate policy, the norm is to do that. So one thing that you can say is, well, look, whenever we calculate TFPE, we're not just going to look at the effect of our inputs and their effect on emissions on domestic consumption, but we're going to look at the effect on global consumption. Right? So that's the norm in the literature. That was also US policy until 2016. So in 2016, or actually 2017, the Trump administration very explicitly said, we do not want to do that. Right? We do not care about the global externality of emissions. And instead, we're going to not have the effect of our emissions on global consumption. We're going to just look at the effect on American consumption. We're going to have the domestic cost of carbon. But if you do that, you get the exact same expression for TFPE. You just get a different number that you put on the cost of carbon. Now, for Canada, the domestic cost of carbon is probably negative. You're going to have lots of landmass that you can live on well. For the UK, we're going to compete on the champagne market, finally. But it's not usually how we do climate policy, right? So we're not going to show you graphs where we put a domestic cost of carbon of minus $20. We're just going to use global estimates because these domestic cost of carbon for most countries are so small. Like Trump put this at $4, right? That climate policy is a non-issue. If that's your view of the world, please don't dismiss TFPE. It's still the welfare relevant measure of productivity. However, it's just going to be really easy to calculate because you just put this cost to zero and then TFP equals TFP, right? So there's no flaw, there's no error in the paper. It just means that you should stop caring about climate policy. So if that's your view of the world, please keep listening. There's a bunch of extensions in the paper that I'm not going to talk about in the interest of time. I'll just mention them in case you're interested. So we can think about non-consumption utility cost of climate change, like old age mortality. Factors like that will just change what we call the social cost of carbon. The whole maps that I just showed you goes through, but the definition of the social cost of carbon will not just be the losses in consumption from a unit of emissions, it'll be all of those other costs associated with climate change that we're currently not capturing. It's also easy to generalize the model with concave utility. They also wanted to mention that we're adjusting productivity here for emissions, but obviously more generally, if there are mispriced parts of outputs, you want to take those into account when you calculate productivity. And you would use exactly our equations to do that. Why would you focus on emissions? Well, emissions were exactly falling at the same time as this productivity slowdown is happening, right? So it's the key externality that's changing in our time. So if we're going to look at productivity growth, emissions-adjusted productivity growth is going to look quite different from emissions. Okay, so let me briefly show you something about data, right? So this is our equation for TFPE. What do we need? We need TFP. We're going to get that from the Pan World Table because we want to have as many countries in there as possible. I'm just going to show you some American and European results. Carbon dioxide emissions, we're going to use trade-adjusted emissions, also known as carbon emissions. So there was a question earlier about the fact that the U.S. has been importing more emissions. So we're going to attribute those to the U.S. And that's because we want to we want to be conservative. We want to say, look, productivity growth is going to look better once we account for emissions. We don't want that to be polluted, no pun intended, by the fact that the US now imports some of its manufacturing inputs. But I'm going to show you in a second that it's less big than maybe you would think. we're going to use GDP for output. And then for the social cost of carbon, we're going to use various values from the literature, going from traditional values of between $30 and $250 to the highest estimated of the literature, such as those by Bilal and Kanzig. And I'm going to show you, so which are like $900 or $1,000 per metric ton. We're going to show you that those are the real values that you need for this to have bite. This is the slide for the gentleman at the back. So this is the slide that I wanted to show you with what do emissions look like adjusted or unadjusted for emissions. So the red line here, the dashed red line, is just a simple path of US emissions. So it was growing for a long time, but it's been declining, right, since the mid 2000s. The solid line is trade adjusted emissions. So it is true that in the late 1990s, you get these lines diverge. So there's this, so China enters WTO, right? You get this increase of manufacturing being shipped overseas, but that slowdown in emissions intensity, right, of US GDP is actually something that's gonna look very similar regardless of which of these two lines that you look at, right? On the other hand, so China's emissions, right, sure, trade-adjusted emissions are lower than the simple emissions, but the emissions in general are exploding, right? So the other day I saw a post on LinkedIn bragging about how China is making progress on climate, and if only the US would be able to achieve the same flatlining of emissions that China has. Well, guys, the US has been doing much better.
The shale gas boom, no?
Exactly. The shale gas, in general, the reduction of coal into production. So, Philippe, I do want to make sure that I wasn't unclear about this. What we're trying to do here is accounting, right? So the framework that I just presented has nothing to say about why emissions are falling. And that's exactly why we need to kind of... Absolutely. But so, yeah, I also don't want to leave as some sort of person who says that the climate policy has been bad for growth. We're not saying this at all. This is purely an accounting exercise that we're running. Okay, so I'm almost out of time, so I'm going to economize on results in the sense that I'm only going to show you results on the growth rate of TFPE. So you can look at the level of productivity adjusted for emissions, and you can look at what the growth rate of productivity looks like adjusted for emissions. In the paper, we do both. In the interest of time, I'm just going to show you about the growth rate. So here is what we find for the United States. The purple solid line in this plots American productivity growth from the Penn World Table. And American productivity growth has that big slowdown starting in the early 2000s. Right? The reason, right, this is what's driving that reduction in productivity that John showed in his slides. The other line gives us emissions adjusted productivity at different estimates of the social cost of carbon per metric ton. So to give you an idea, a metric ton of carbon is about what you burn on a return flight from London to Boston in an A350. So if the social cost of carbon is $1,000, then the fare, the Pigouvian tax on the return flight, right, to Boston should be $1,000, right? So if you think it's $4, no plane tax. If you think it's $1,000, then we have to pay something. That's based on an economy seat, by the way. Apologies for those who fly business. It's going to be a lot more expensive. At a $50 social cost of carbon, there's almost no change in productivity. At a $250 social cost of carbon, we have the orange dashed line, there's still only a very small change in the path of productivity. However, as you get to these current highest estimates of the social cost of carbon, the reduction in emissions emissions intensity of production is so powerful that if you look at productivity growth over time, the green line, if anything, it's been accelerating over time. And that's because in the 1990s, emissions intensity was growing when productivity was productivity growth was high. So we thought we were doing great, but it was at the expense of the future. Right now, right, we think we're doing less well, but actually, once you account for the progress on emissions, we're actually doing better than in the 1990s. However, right, that requires that you believe the climate is important, so that the cost of climate change are large, and that you think about the global externality. That even high estimates of the domestic cost for Europe are hardly ever above $200 per metric ton.
Even suppose I'm very cynical and I don't care. It may be, you know, for future generations they may have to spend more.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Even in those terms, you see, I mean, if I...
Absolutely.
Different accounting, but if I look in terms of the... which kind of environmental debt and true public debt...
100%.
I might be cynical, but still, I leave more for future generations to span.
You can be cynical, but still care about your kids. Exactly. And so we have a colleague at the LSE, Lord Stern, right? And he wrote a very influential report where he says this exponential discounting, which is behind those low estimates of the social cost of carbon, is immoral, right? Because exponential discounting is saying that someone in the future is like a tenth of a person, which we don't do with other people in the room. Exactly, exactly. And so if you put a zero discount rate on the social cost of carbon, you can definitely get these high values, even if the absolute damage to GDP today is small. 100%, 100%. Please.
Another problem of these estimates is that they don't take any tipping points into account.
So yeah.
If we have tipping points, you know, the campaign story of the UK may be more about penguins. Or
absolutely, absolutely. Now, I don't want to get into the tipping points debate because my understanding actually of the Earth modeling literature is that it's pretty controversial. It's not said that they exist. But I fully agree with you that this is based on the idea that we care about some sort of average risk. And if there is a tail risk of the end of the world, maybe we want to put a really high price on that. Absolutely. So the way to interpret this graph is you take the number, the dollar number that you're happy to put on carbon in your climate cost benefit analyses. If it's $900, our results tell you that you should not be worried about the productivity slowdown. If you think it's more like $50, right, there has still been a productivity slowdown. The flip side of that coin is that it means that growth is just the only thing, traditional economic growth is the only thing that matters. So I'm looking at Alexandra. I think I'm out of time. So I'm happy to discuss more about European results in Europe. Emissions started falling earlier, so it's less of a dramatic correction to the slowdown. But in general, in Europe, emissions-adjusted productivity is higher than standard productivity. Sorry, the gap in emissions-adjusted productivity between Europe and the U.S. is much smaller, right, than the gap in simple total factor productivity, because Europe has this lower emissions intensity of production. And so we'd say that when you care about productivity as a measure that is welfare relevant, that tells you how good are we at producing utils with inputs, this is the metric that you should be focusing on. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.